British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has used the visit to Scotland to criticise the endless talk about an independence referendum amid growing calls for another poll. The visit comes as the Scottish National Party has revealed an 11-point roadmap on how it intends to take forward its plan for a vote on the issue.
I think what people want to see is us bouncing back more strongly together. I don't see the advantage of getting lost in pointless constitutional wrangling when, after all, we had a referendum not so very long ago.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Scotland's First Minister Nicola Sturgeon has questioned whether Boris Johnson's trip is essential travel, saying leaders should abide by the same COVID-19 rules that they impose on the public. Sir John Curtis is Professor of Politics at the University of Strathclyde in Glasgow and joins me now. Welcome to RM Breakfast.
Good morning.
What is the true purpose of Boris Johnson's visit?
Well, in that, of course, there is something of a tangled web. Manifestly, the principal purpose was indeed to visit a factory that is hoping to produce a lot of a vaccine that's yet to be accepted and shown to be effective, but is due to be built in Scotland. To visit one of the places where people's tests are looked at, and it's a laboratory which does a lot of these tests to find out whether people have got coronavirus or not, and also then to visit somewhere else where the vaccination was rolling out. So, as it were, the manifest purpose was for the Prime Minister to inform himself about various aspects of the handling of the pandemic at north of the border. But, of course, as you've already said, he certainly didn't confine his remarks to that subject. He did indicate, as we know, that he's not very keen on the idea of a referendum. But, of course, one of the difficulties in any event is that the question of the pandemic and the question of independence have become intertwined with each other, because certainly in the most recent increase in support for independence, we're now running at about 54% support for independence.
So it's flipped.
So it's flipped. We've now got a small majority in favour of independence as compared with the 45% back in the referendum in 2014. You know, one of the most proximate reason for that is that although, you know, if you look at the actual record in England and in Scotland about how many people have died as a result of the pandemic, well, you know, the UK has one of the worst records in the world. And yes, Scotland's slightly better than England, but it's still, frankly, still well up there in the league table of places that have done badly. So although there isn't much difference in the actual outcome, the public in Scotland have come to the conclusion that Nicola Sturgeon, the First Minister of Scotland, who's been responsible, as in the States, in Australia, for doing all those day-to-day decisions about lockdown and when not to lockdown and what the rules are, all those decisions for Scotland have been made for Scotland. They've come to the conclusion that Nicola Sturgeon has kind of known what she's doing, whereas they formed the opposite view about Boris Johnson and his management of the pandemic in England. Now, it's an interesting question as to why it is, but it's clearly to do with a different style of the politicians. But crucially, some people have moved on from that difference of perception to say to themselves, well, I voted for staying in the Union back in 2014, but actually I'm now wondering whether or not Scotland might have handled the coronavirus pandemic. About one in five of those people who voted no in 2014 are saying, I think maybe Scotland would have handled the pandemic better. And it is clear a fair proportion of those are now saying, well, actually, I would vote yes. So in other words, the handling of the pandemic has now become a central feature, and the perceptions of the handling of the pandemic become a central feature of where the public now stand on independence. And to that extent, any visit north of the border that has anything to do with the coronavirus is inevitably deeply political.
So in other words, he's created a problem for himself by making that. And Brexit presumably complicates that matter too.
Yeah, the other reason why support for independence in Scotland has risen, and this was evident really as long ago as 2019, is that, you know, in Scotland, people voted by almost 2-1 in favour of remaining inside the European Union, in contrast to the UK as a whole. And it's become clear that some of those people who voted no in the 2014 independence referendum, but then for remain in the 2016 Brexit referendum, that some of those people are now saying, no, I would vote yes. And indeed, you know, all of the initial increase in support for independence that became evident in 2019 occurred entirely amongst Remain voters. So although Boris Johnson himself, of course, believes that Brexit is good for Britain and he thinks it's perfectly reasonable that Scotland, as part of the United Kingdom, should have left the European Union in line with the rest of the UK, there are plenty of people in Scotland who disagree with him. They think it's wrong that Scotland's been taken out of the European Union, and therefore, as a result, they're not so sanguine about staying inside the United Kingdom.
So the SNP's got this roadmap. I think they've got an election in May. How can they do this? They need the approval of Westminster to do another referendum.
Probably, but perhaps not necessarily. And therein lies potentially a difficult game of chess. It's certainly true that if we're going to hold a referendum of the same kind that was held in 2014, then it requires Westminster authority. But in fact, more than a decade ago, the SNP was trying to work out how you might hold a referendum that would be legal, even though it didn't get sanctioned by the UK Parliament. And it's a complicated argument, but it essentially says, let's have a referendum in which we ask the people in Scotland whether they want the Scottish government to negotiate with the UK government. And the argument is that a referendum phrased in that way might actually be legal. Now, the truth is the lawyers don't agree, but what's important is that perhaps it might be possible. Although, of course, even then, the difficulty is, you know, the UK government would not be party to that referendum. They can say, well, that's fine, you can hold your referendum, but so what? There's an argument about whether or not many unions would just simply try to boycott the referendum and undermine its legitimacy, et cetera, et cetera. But I think what you need to be aware of is that certainly if the SNP do get an overall majority in the Scottish Parliament, there will be a constitutional clash, and that we're both sides in this clash. It won't just simply be a question of saying Boris says no, that's the end of the story. Both sides in this clash have cards to play, or if you prefer, they have chess pieces to play on the board, and the question is going to be who's got the better board and who's going to play their pieces rather better. And on that, you know, it's not entirely clear how things will fall out.
How delusional is the notion that Scotland could survive by itself? I mean, Scotland's oil only gets you so far.
Well, I guess one answer to that is, well, which do you think is now going to be in Scotland's economic interest? Is it in Scotland's economic interest to be part of a single market along with England of around 50 million people? Or is it better for Scotland to be part of the European Union single market of, you know, many, many more millions of people? You know, you have, but it certainly has to be understood that the fact the United Kingdom has left the European Union, something that a lot of people think will be economically disadvantageous, has potentially changed the terms of the debate about the economic consequences. That said, one thing that's certainly true, the price of oil now is relatively low, and in 2014 that apparently was still going to be a crucial part of Scotland's fiscal future as an independent state. And secondly, also, certainly, I mean, all governments at the moment are borrowing very large amounts of money. They're in severe debt, but, you know, by any measure, the amount of debt that Scotland is incurring is proportionately greater than that in England. And then, so therefore, there is the question of whether or not Scotland has a sufficiently strong tax base in the long run to be able to sustain independence. And that's, you know, some of the arguments that will be played out if indeed we get to a referendum at any point in time. And there's no guarantee as to which way in the end the Scottish public will fall. We certainly do know from 2014 that perceptions of the economic consequences of independence were pretty important to determining how people ended up voting.
Particularly the elderly. So John Curtis, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
So John Curtis is Professor of Politics at the University of Strathclyde in Glasgow.